This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. The great man school of history is getting bumped off of its pedestal. Bulging biographies of influential men are so last year. Any visit to your local bookstore will convince you that the great year theory is now selling and 1914 is in. On the front display table, Max Hastings' Catastrophe, Europe Goes to War, 1914. Christopher Clark's The Sleepwalkers, How Europe Went to War, 1914. Mark Bostridge's The Fateful Year, England, 1914, and a host of other titles are making 1914 a new celebrity. Simon Reed Henry is a reader in geography at Queen Mary, University of London. He is concerned that by focusing on a single year, this new crop of anno histories may miss the larger historical context. Simon Reed Henry, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be with you.
Can you remind us briefly of this idea of the great man school of history, what it means and when it was developed?
Right. Well, this was sort of a Victorian conceit or style of history, I suppose you might say, in which, you know, the actions of charismatic leaders, particularly, and individuals were seen to really shape historical events. It was very much the idea of an individual personality imposing themselves upon history.
You are now observing another, I guess, approach or perspective or even phenomenon, anno history. What is that?
Yeah, right. Well, anno history is not my phrase. This is the phrase of an American scholar, Dave Graeber. And he sort of points out, and I take it further a little bit tongue-in-cheek, I suppose, given that we have this year in 2014 so many anniversaries to celebrate or commiserate among ourselves, the idea that perhaps we are putting a bit too much focus on individual years. One understands the publisher's line into this. This is a great way of selling books, not least. But historically speaking, is it the best way of writing about the past? We're confronted by this, plethora of single dates, which seem to tell us their own particular story. And I suppose my point is that story gets a little too easily condensed. It becomes simply a case of learning the lessons of history, as that old canard has it. Mm-hmm. And that can be a little bit more dangerous.
Well, focusing on a single year, I think, gives us some sort of anchor. You know, there's this way station in this long stretch of the past. But what do you think gets missed when we focus on a single year?
Yeah, I think what you say is actually an important point. And there's no doubt that, you know, there are some years where important things happen. 1492 would be another example, and I mentioned this one in the article. But often the way to think about those years is not necessarily as a constellation of great events, and here we are back again at the great men of history school, but as, you know, turning points, or where particular sorts of histories that were underway before switched somehow or were displaced into a different set of processes. So rather than the discovery of the new world, which is what 1492 is about, we might instead want to think about the relations between different parts of the world and whether Europe's discovery of the new world was the only discovery of that particular period, whether it was the most important one, and whether it was the one that's actually led us to the best possible future. These are sorts of questions that I think get lost and left out of a particular, as you say, anno history focus on one particular year.
Well, I'm not thinking that 1913, the book, would sell particularly
yeah.
Well.
No, that's exactly right. But often things happen in years outside of those key dates and we miss them. And this is another part of it.
Well, what are some of your ideas then, Simon, about challenging the significance of the individual year or taking a more panoramic view?
Right. Well, I'm a geographer by training and by profession, which is not to say that we don't deal in a good deal of history or have a lot to say and do with our history colleagues. But one of the sort of geographer's classic approaches to things is to think in the bigger picture, in the round, and to try to see how processes develop over time rather than individual events dominating any particular story. It's very easy to tell a story, a narrative around events. It's actually much harder, but not impossible, and often more important, to tell a story of process, of how things gradually take us from one set of circumstances to another. So, for example, how processes of the formation of empires lead one to 1914 and the events that happen in the Great War. And that isn't necessarily a process of, you know, determining whose empire was the best or the worst. Was it the Russians that were the most imperial, or the Germans, or the British? But really about questioning empire as a process itself. And that, of course, brings in whole other parts of the world. And this is why geographers are particularly interested in it, because whenever we talk of dates, we're talking from a particular position. You know, we're talking about 1914 as important to us in Europe. You say 1913 isn't important. Perhaps 1913 is important in other people's histories. And again, it's very easy to leave those out of the picture.
Well, one thing I found it so interesting in your article is distinguishing between looking back at the past and a past. Can you elaborate on that for us?
Yeah, this is, I mean, I think, again, this is something that geographers are particularly attuned to, which is the idea of historical possibilities that either get closed off or not even opened up and made into a discussion. So one of the problems of having a particular year is it becomes something you either want to celebrate or resist, which falls into a very sort of binary way of understanding the past. And that only opens ourselves up to so many futures. You know, one wants to always think of possible ways of doing things better in the future. And remembering the lessons of the past isn't necessarily the only way of doing that. Remembering which history's got closed off, that's also another way of doing it. And I think that's something that we could, you know, profitably focus on in our histories going forward.
Well, it's so interesting now that Russian troops are lining up, retreating and lining up again at the borders of Ukraine. Talk is bubbling up again of something happening, you know, akin to the flashpoint of the Archduke being assassinated in Sarajevo. Is there a problem with this kind of equivalency of this 100 years?
Yeah, I think so. A lot of loose talk, in truth. It happens in part because it's occurring right now, you know, during this period of anniversary celebration. It focuses people's minds. So in some ways, it's proof of what I'm saying. But, you know, there are other ways. People are talking a lot about, you know, is this time for a new era of containment and so forth? Containment, of course, was the Cold War era geopolitical solution to the problem of the Soviets. But, you know, again, it's always possible in history and life to find some evidence of what you're after. The question is whether the balance of proof, whether the burden of proof really stacks up. And I think in this case, it doesn't.
Simon Reed-Henry, a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you.
No, my pleasure. Thanks so much.
Simon Reed-Henry reads geography at Queen Mary. That's Queen Mary College at the University of London. He's also author of the book The Cuban Cure. You can find a link to read his article, When Years Are Celebrities. It was published at moreintelligentlife.com. There's a link at wordofmouthradio.org. Some eventful years in world history have inspired piles of historical texts and academic papers. Other years that offer less to the historical narrative have been celebrated in a different way, through music. So tonight I'm gonna party like it's 1999. Whether looking ahead to the future or taking a nostalgic dive into the past, musicians have written countless songs named after one year or another. So we have come up with a little challenge for you. We're going to play a few different songs. See if you can name the band and the year that the song is named after. We bleeped out any reference to the date in the lyrics, so you'll just have to figure it out based on your own recall. I'm going to play along with you and read the answers when we're done. Okay, Taylor, hit it. Oh, easy peasy, got it.
About halfway through. How you doing?
I don't get the third one, that kind of electronic-y one.
Yeah, the no lyrics, so that makes it tough. It's another year for me and you.
Another year with nothing to do. We are the youth, and politicians are so sure.
this thought.
All right, so how'd you do?
I'm thinking the first one was David Bowie's 1984.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Okay. And then guessing Tchaikovsky War of 1812 Overture.
You got it.
The third one, what was that?
The third one was 1991 by Crystal Castles.
The fourth one was Queen in the Year of 39. I not only know the song, I probably know every single word to the song. I was on a Queen bender when I was in middle school. The Stooges, 1969?
You got it.
Okay. Silverchair, I didn't know this one. Silverchair, Anthem for the Year 2000.
Yeah, I had to find some. We had a lot of classic rock in there, so I had to make it a little younger at one point.
Okay, and then Elvis Costello, 45.
You got it.
All right, so how did you do? You can tell us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/wordofmouth. And while you're there, tell us about your favorite song that's named after a year. Doesn't have to be 1914. We've heard an awful lot about that. But when we continue, we're going to leap 1 year ahead to bring you the story of Herland. That is a utopian novel that was published in 1915. We're going to find out why a book about an all-female society struck such a chord with Americans at the time. But first, the news from 2014. There's a rebel in a nylon shirt.